And thanks for everyone being with us again, I guess, for the second time in 2 weeks. We are within 3 weeks of the tournament now. So obviously a lot of questions about the field and how it's shaping up and the exemption decisions we've made. That's why we felt a separate call, you know, might be nice. Plus, Ashley Hansen from our office will be, I'll be handing the baton to her, the great Ashley Hansen, to kind of explain, now that Illinois has gone to stage five, a lot of questions about what has changed potentially in our planning, what we can and can't do, talking after me. The field is now posted on our website. We usually do that within the last 30 days. If you haven't seen it, feel free to pull it up. It changes daily at this point. There's always 156 names there, depending on who adds and what category the names in the lower rank categories fall off. We just put the alpha list up there. There's another version of it that explains what categories these different players are. Thought I'd spend a couple minutes just kind of walking through some of those. We've got Zach Johnson, of course, this is top-rated category, winning the Open in 2015. Jason Duffner's also in a highly ranked category. Then there's 30 players who have won tournaments in the last 2 years, and that is a distinguished group of players. I won't go through all 30 names, but you'll recognize them if you follow golf, and obviously all of you do. The other things that we're really excited about, quite honestly, as people ask us about the field, it's our 50th anniversary. Obviously, that's pretty well known at this point. And we have a really nice list of past champions who, as of today, have officially committed. We're hopeful that we might get a couple more before the deadline. But obviously, Steve Stricker, the only three-time winner, three consecutive winner. D.A. Wibring was a three-time winner as well. But in a year where he could be playing at the U.S. Senior Open, he's decided to join us. Obviously, as Ryder Cup captain, he's got a lot on his plate. But we have him, Zach, Brian Harman, Sean O'Hare, John Senden, Jonathan Bird, Michael Kim, and obviously Dylan Fratelli, who we all listened to last week. And what a great guy to represent the John Deere Classic. Then the international group of players is getting very interesting, I think. Ben Ahn, who's never been here before, that's going to be in the Open, is committed. Rafa Cabrera-Bejo, Ryder Cup player. Martin Laird from Scotland, Jonas Blix, Tom Lewis, KJ Choi, Anirban Lahiri, Kiradesh Avibanrat, one of the great names ever. You guys will all get well practiced saying that name. They're all, you know, some of them in the field for the first time, but that's kind of where we are as of today. Everyone's asking about, you know, a handful of other players. We don't know anything past that. What we do know is, and something we've always taken very seriously, are sponsor exemptions. And we're really excited this year. PGA Tour instituted this PGA Tour University just before COVID hit. And basically, if you're not familiar with it, it gives collegiate players a way to start their professional careers that didn't exist before based on their success in college. The top five get to go to Korn Ferry events immediately, and that's already started to happen. There's another group below those. I think there's 15 below those that go to other tours, whether it be what we used to call the Canadian or McKenzie Tour. I think it's renamed now, Latino American Tour, whatever. But they have, again, a chance to start their professional careers that didn't exist before. So we were always well-known and proud of the fact that we would give collegiate players a chance to start their careers when these things didn't exist. That said, we've also really enjoyed over the years being able to celebrate those players that are coming out of colleges close to us. There's obviously, we represent the Quad Cities, two different states. There's wonderful colleges and wonderful programs in both those states, plus the Midwest. many times these players don't get the chances that some of the other players playing for Texas or Oklahoma or Florida or Georgia or whatever are getting. So I really thought this year, after a year off, we'd focus on giving spots to guys that we really admire, that have worked really hard, but are going to schools closer to the John Deere Classic, and guys that might not be getting exemptions from other tournaments. So you've got the news release. There's a really nice short bio on each of the players. I'm not going to read it. And these are in alphabetical order, just so you know. It's not our top to bottom ranking by any stretch. But we've got Michael Feagles from the University of Illinois. Tremendous program there, led by Mike Small, as you know. You know, he just finished, I think, fourth in the individual NCAA championship as an individual, and Illinois always seems to make it. He ranked seventh in the PGA Tour University standings. So Tripp Kinney from Iowa State, another really great young man. All these guys are great young men. Going to school just about 3.5 hours from here in Ames, and you can read about his accomplishments. Luke Kluver, a Nebraska young man who goes to school at Kansas, another celebrated Midwestern player. Willie Mack from Michigan originally. He's out playing. He was in the Korn Ferry event last week, made the cut. I think he finished 62nd maybe. But if you don't know his story, it's compelling. And we're excited to have him as one of our exemptions. David Perkins from Illinois State. That's D.A. Wibring's hometown, or not hometown, but his school. He's an alum from there. And David has had a terrific collegiate career. Finally, alphabetically, Alex Shockey from University of Iowa. We gave his brother, Carson Shockey, a spot maybe back in 2016. Carson just was a medalist in the U.S. Open qualifying. He's going to play in the U.S. Open this week. So the Shockey family is one that we're familiar with, and Alex is a really great player and young man. So we've got Illinois, Illinois State, Iowa, Iowa State, Kansas, and then Bethune-Cookman University is where Willie went to college. So I can't tell you how excited I am about this. It's a little bit of a one-off philosophically. We many times, you know, in 2019, we had some of the top-rated amateurs ever, Colin Morikawa, Victor Hovland, and Matthew Wolf, Justin Suh were here. They've had a nice start to their professional careers. But we really are excited about our, if you want to call them hometown heroes, and what they're going to bring to their professional careers and what they're going to mean to our tournament. So that's, I guess, the end of my comments about the field. I think maybe we ought to answer some questions, if there are some, about the field before we go into the structural changes that the protocols are going
to. Would you take us through the process you use to bring your philosophy to life as far as giving these opportunities to the kids? In this case, a 32-year-old guy.
Well, it's very scientific. It's unbelievable. If I had a whiteboard, I'd be able to walk you through it. But no, it ebbs and it flows, just like the golf universe ebbs and flows. The basic philosophy of a sponsor exemption is somebody who wouldn't be in your field otherwise, that's going to bring some degree of interest to tournament week. And that's a broad definition. Going back to 05-06, Michelle Wee fit that description and made sense for us. Quite honestly, there are a lot of people, when we announce these things, that say, oh man, how come you didn't include this, that, or the other player? But for each year, we make decisions that we feel make sense. And for this year, after having a year off, and quite honestly, I think talking personally to every one of these six players, the process of how they come to us and how they make their request is all over the place. Sometimes it's a form letter that, you know, they're sending out to 20 different events, and they just substitute your name and your tournament, even though sometimes The ones that come in as Ms. Claire Peterson, we pretty much put in a different pile. Some call, some email, some keep in contact. And all of these players that we chose this year, it meant a lot to them. They had a personal point of connection with us. And for this year, it made sense. So that's the scientific process.
Is this a larger group of exemptions this year?
No, we're just making the assumption that all the Korn Ferry guys are going to get in. Never in my, 19 years as tournament director have we not gotten the two Korn Ferry events back as an unrestricted exemption. So we get four unrestricted, and then two have to go to Korn Ferry guys if they don't get in. Two go to veteran PGA Tour members. These are our six unrestricted.
Was the follow-up, was the field, the applications that you got, the letters you got, just as deep this year as ever?
Yeah, probably more so, because we didn't have an event last year. And then the collegiate players were allowed, because of COVID, to extend their collegiate career by a year, transfer to different schools. So the universe was bigger this year, certainly.
Can you tell us a little bit about David Perkins? I know he's a kid from East Peoria, and he has a good tie with D.A. Weibring. Knows D.A. He's an Illinois State kid. I think he's got a course record on D.A.'s course at Illinois State. So, I mean, just what you've learned about him. And
yeah, we became aware of, David last year. He sent us a letter for the 2020 event. So we've started to get to know him a little bit better. And certainly, just like applying for a job, recommendations do carry some weight. It's not the only thing that we consider. We know he's a terrific young guy, and he's very accomplished as a player. A DA certainly spoke well of them. And then, quite honestly, another piece to the puzzle is that as he turns professional, he's going to be represented by Mario Tiziani, who we have great respect for. He's Steve Stricker's brother-in-law, had been on tour for a while. And all the guys in that camp are terrific guys. We've always loved having them here. They're appreciative. They're down to earth. So that carried some weight as well. So his accomplishments, who he decided to be represented by, which I think speaks well, David. And then DA, a year ago, talking very positively about him as well.
I mean, you said 19 years, but how is this year different than the 19? And with, news of Friday of the state opening up and everything's constantly changing, how has, I always joke with you, only work a month a year, but how has this last month been for you, Claire?
The landscape is constantly changed, really, from a year ago. Over a year ago, I think it was May 23rd, that we announced that we weren't going to have the 2020 event, but we still were going to do the charitable side of our business. We've been doing meaningful work, but having to really start planning in January and start budgeting and deciding what kind of build you were going to have so you could go to hospitality clients and explain to them what was going to be available from a product standpoint, let them make a decision about if they wanted to be in an enclosed area, how many people they might want to invite, at the same time that COVID protocols were still very restrictive, kind of seeing things loosen up as the vaccination had a major impact. We've had to be accepting and able to adjust, and we feel we've done it successfully. We rolled out our ticket sales last week, and there's been a great response so far. I think people, after not having the tournament last year, there's real to get back to it, even in its kind of modified form. If we were to start today, we'd probably do the build differently, but we didn't know where we were going to be. So it's we feel pretty proud about where we are and how the community's responded. How about the community last year, donating $12.2 million without an event?
Again, since you're talking about the build and things like that, has anything changed in regards to how you proceed with the tournament now that the state is opening up? Was it too late for you guys to change any of your plans at that point? And how do you proceed with the state opening up again?
Wow, we couldn't have scripted this any better. This is the perfect baton pass opportunity for Ashley to address some of that. If you guys have questions, any more questions about the field or anything else, we can open it up after. But Ashley's got, I think, answers for all those things you just talked about, TJ.
From a build standpoint, there's nothing changing at this point. So we're sticking with our two different ticket types. And I can talk a little bit more about that if anybody has questions. But those are online and available for purchase now. So I think the biggest thing that changed is just the flexibility to add more spectators into those two ticket types, those two categories. So we were kind of focused on that 10,000 number initially. So now we have a little more ability to add people to the course throughout the week on top of that 10,000. We do still have to have approval by the PGA Tour, and we work closely with their team every week just to stay in lockstep on what's important. And
what does that number go to then? The 10,000 number?
I don't know that there's necessarily a set number. I think that we have the ability to, you know, add up to 5,000 more and still be in a comfortable situation with what we have available on site in terms of, you know, all the intricacies of behind the scenes concessions and restrooms and shuttles and things like that. So we're still in good position to flex up a little bit in terms of that number. And we hope that that's the case too. So we hope the community comes out and supports the event and sees all the great golf that we have available that they missed last year.
Have you changed anything with the shuttle, or does that stay the same with just the two lots?
That is the that's the same right now. So we've got the lot at the Rock Island County Fairgrounds, and we've got the lot at the Bend. As of today, we don't see a need to add an additional lot. If we get to the point where we think we might, then we'll have to put a backup plan in place. But right now we feel comfortable with where we're at. All ticket sales are online and in advance. We're not doing any at the gate sales this year. We're trying to cut down on any of those touch points as much as possible. So anybody who wanted to park in one of those lots will just need to purchase the pass in advance and have it ready to show on their phone once they get to the lot. So we'll have folks on site to help with any issues or any confusion that people might have, but hoping if we talk about it enough in advance, then people will be prepared for it as they get to the gates in the parking lot. In addition to that, all of our tickets are day specific, along with our parking passes, which are day specific and lot specific. So we're very specific this year. And that is just, again, you know, in light of all of the COVID regulations that we've had to work through this year. So we just need to keep an eye on our numbers and make sure we've got people allocated to the right spots. On Wednesday, we are going to be doing our Military Appreciation Day. So all military guests will have the opportunity to register online, and they will get a ticket for themselves and a guest for free. We hope to have that link available here shortly. We're just waiting on our supplier to hand that over so we can push it out to the public. And then for anybody else who wants to come out that day, the tickets are $20, and we're kind of deeming it a community day. Would be a great opportunity to get out and see the field. And the other thing that we are bringing back and we're really excited about is our youth policy. So we still aren't able to do our youth day. Nothing changes there. But throughout the week, we are going to offer free tickets for kids 15 and under, as long as they're coming with a paid adult. And then lastly, we're still in need of volunteers. One thing that we were happy to bring back for that group as well is initially, because of our capacity limitations, we weren't going to be able to let them use their volunteer badge to come out and enjoy golf outside of their shifts that were scheduled. But now that is available to them again. So they can come on out, park in the lots, use their grounds pass to get, or use their volunteer badge to get grounds access through the main gate. Helps pull people back into the volunteer pool, and we have some good numbers again. It's looking good, but we can always use extra help, especially marshalling, and I think maybe even standard bearers could use an extra hand too. So the course is closed on Monday and Tuesday to the public. We do have a Monday pro-am that is made up of folks from the tournament side. It's not a sponsored event by any corporations or anything like that, but we do have participants from the local community who will be out. That starts at noon. It's a shotgun start.
TJ, again, talk about volunteer numbers. How many are you at, and what did you end up with in 2019, just to compare numbers?
In 2019, we had about 2,100 volunteers, which was great. We had plenty of hands available to help and just a lot of community engagement from that standpoint. This year, we knew our number was going to be a little different because of COVID restrictions. So there were actually initially groups that we weren't going to be needing at all. And as we get closer to the finish line, some of those things are being brought back in. So our numbers are, we're right around 1,300 to 1,400, I believe, but would like to be closer to 1,800. So a lot of those holes are marshals just because we need so many folks per hole.
Any COVID protocols that remain? Any masking situations that fans are going to need to know about? Are vaccinations required to be on property? Anything that the fans need to be aware of?
Us, along with the PGA Tour, we are following CDC guidelines on masking. So the same rules that you see kind of out in the community apply to the course as well. And we have those, it's on our Know Before You Go page on our website, but those are being pulled from the PGA Tour and we're sharing them locally at our tournament as well. So anybody who's vaccinated does not have to prove their vaccination. We're doing honor system. So just hoping everybody's making the right choices to keep themselves and those around them safe. But if you are vaccinated, no masks are necessary indoors or out. And then for the folks who are not fully vaccinated yet, the recommendation is to wear a mask when you can't socially distance yourself from others.
Rory Spears has a question.
That's a common question we get. You know, now that the state of Illinois has kind of opened things up, what does that mean for the tournament? The PGA Tour, like I said, hasn't really relaxed those kinds of restrictions. They still have a defined bubble and are trying to make sure that players inside the bubble aren't at any more risk than the tour wants to put them in. So that hasn't changed even in the pro-am groups and so forth, the way they're taking their photographs, the autographs that guys normally expect having paid for the privilege of being in the pro-am are being restricted as well. So I know kids are going to be disappointed, but there's just no way around that one.
What advice do you have for people who were fortunate enough to get a ticket and come to the event?
Almost everyone that is going to want a ticket probably going to be able to get one. So I don't really feel like we're going to have a lot of people shut out with 15,000 a day, especially. Maybe on the weekends it's going to be a little tougher, but I really feel as if it's an event presented in a way that we used to. You know, we didn't have air-conditioned hospitality suites, you know, for 50 different clients 20 years ago. It's a product that you can consume in a lot of different ways. It's not like going to a baseball game where you're assigned a seat and see the action from one vantage point. The way the build is now, I think you saw it on TV. We just had a call this morning with Lance Barrow in our executive committee. Lance is on the board at the Charles Schwab event at Colonial. And the way that looked on TV with so many people following their favorite players and their favorite groups, every once in a while having a pavilion that came into view that had people sitting in it. This is the way it's going to look this year. And it's a bit of a throwback. Maybe in our 50th anniversary, it's a perfect year for it. But it's still a wonderful way to watch the contest. There's people, we just had the NAIA collegiate finals here, you know, and everyone's walking and people are following groups and so forth. It's still very enjoyable. So that's kind of what fans can expect this year. It's not the same, but it's doable and the stories will be told and the contest will take place and it'll be different, but it'll be great.